All right, back on the Young Turks. Oh no, drop it again. Nando Villa joins us now. He's host, correspondent, producer on Fusion. You've done too many things there. Executive producer of Trump Land. Did the Soccer Gods, which Judah Friedlander was a frequent guest on.
Yes, he was a great collaborator.
Yes, of course, Francesco Fiorentini stays with us, and Anna Kasparian joins us in the second hour.
Is this a panel of actual Young Turks?
minus me, yes.
Wow.
My kids, they don't say except. For whatever reason, I don't know, they got stuck in their head and I don't correct them because it's too cute. They say unless.
Right.
Okay. Oh. It's all Young Turks, unless Baba.
Oh. That's
all right, let me read some quick tweets for you guys. Brian, this is all about the NFL issue. Brian Newton says, here's an idea, boycott NFL. How's that for inmates? Brian, you're right. Sean King's right, but that's my opioid. I can't let it go.
On Sundays.
I can't let it go.
Just hooked up the IV.
I know. And
doesn't that make you like Trump, right? I mean, isn't that then? I don't know when
Take
Trump
that back.
Wins. Yeah, I don't know when Trump wins. Whether you watch it or not, someone's just got to give me like a green and red and.
Oh, I see. I'll, the boycott makes
right,
you
the
like
boycotting
Trump, right?
Yeah. NFL.
Yeah, both sides want to boycott it. So, okay, then fine, I'll watch it.
You have to watch half the game and then turn it off.
Bipartisan agreement.
Keld Vizier writes in, America in a nutshell, only the billionaire oligarchs matter. And that is at least the point of view of the NFL owners, according to McNair, the owner of the Texans. And Matt says the NFL patriotism is paid for by the government. A massive military marketing campaign. Matt, great point. That's the one I made after you wrote that tweet. Great, and sometimes medium minds think alike. So anyway,
wow.
no offense.
No, you already said it. It was about Nando.
I can tell. It's a subtweet on a panel.
Okay, Anna, what's next?
All right, let's do some stories. If you're wondering whether or not ICE agents are spending their time and resources going after criminals and deporting them, you would be wrong. In fact, a recent story indicates that they thought it would be a great idea to follow a 10-year-old with cerebral palsy all the way to the hospital, stand outside of her hospital room as she underwent gallbladder surgery, and then immediately detain her after she was well enough to leave the hospital, and she has been in a shelter ever since, waiting on deportation. Her name is Rosa Maria Hernandez, and she was brought into the United States when she was just 3 months old. She had to be rushed to the hospital for an emergency surgery, and as a result, went through a border patrol checkpoint. And at that point, they realized that she was undocumented, and that was when everything transpired. So the family members say that the agents at first refused to even allow them to close the door of the room that she was in, and they would not leave. Anywhere Maria went, they went. And Rosa Maria's teachers say that even though she's 10 years old, because of her condition, she has the brain function of a 4 to 5 year old. And so she is not a threat to anyone by any means, but it doesn't matter. This is what ICE officials are spending their time on.
So for those of you who don't live near the border or have not been there, you might be confused. Like, well, if she's at a border checkpoint, she's by definition just coming into the country. That is actually not true. There are border checkpoints deep into the country. So a lot of American citizens in places like Texas live below the checkpoints. And so that's why she had never had to travel past the checkpoint before, even though almost her entire life has been lived in the state of Texas.
Yeah, so this happened in Laredo, Texas. And there has been absolutely no empathy from the Border Patrol agents who were involved in this. In fact, there was a spokesperson for the Laredo Sector Border Patrol. Let's go to graphic 6. And they said that they are committed to enforcing the immigration laws of this nation per the immigration laws of the United States. Once medically cleared, Rosa Maria will be processed accordingly. And by the way, they won't even allow her to be with her mother. She's in this shelter. Her family has no word about the conditions of this shelter. They're not able to communicate with her. And they're thinking that she's just gonna get deported. Mm-hmm. It's insane.
And it looks like not the only case.
Yeah.
You know, we know that they're detaining grandmothers and people with children and separating families. I just have one word, which is scumbag. I mean, these guys are scumbags. I understand that, you know, that there's a hiring, a hiring spree at ICE and on the border. But if you're involved in this kind of stuff, like, how do you sleep? How do you look at yourself in the mirror? These are not the people who are threatening the United States, nor are undocumented immigrants. We know, the stats show, they are not disproportionately threatening Americans any more than we threaten ourselves.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, extreme levels of violence towards immigrants has been a normal part of this country for maybe just 2.5 decades, you know, millions of people deported, which is just an incredibly traumatic process for anyone. I mean, if you can imagine what it must be like to forcibly be removed from your country, the country that you're living in, whatever that may be, and sent back across the border, often to very violent areas. This is just like the tip of the iceberg is in a very extreme example, and shows just how fanatic and ideologically driven these agencies can be in their zeal to deport anyone and anyone they can get their hands on.
Mm-hmm. So the only slight disagreement I'll have with you guys is that I think, and I know it's probably not a disagreement, I think the person culpable here is the people who gave the orders in the first place.
Right.
So I know it's not an excuse that they're following orders, but to me, the agents are far less culpable for carrying out the orders than the guy who gave the orders.
Sure.
So Trump had promised, oh, don't worry, I'm only going to take out immigrants, undocumented immigrants with a criminal background. But he lied, and they've now doubled the number of people that they have deported that have no criminal background at all. And obviously, this young 10-year-old girl does not. And she came over, as we pointed out, when she was 3 months old. So to send her back to her country, she's never known any country but America. Mm-hmm. And so you can say, well, I don't care, and I don't care if she's sick. Okay, fine, then maybe the adjective that Francesca used does apply to you, if you're that heartless. Mm-hmm. Now, it's not to say that there shouldn't be a rational solution for how we handle this overall problem, but if you think, I don't care that they don't have a criminal background. I don't care this is the only country they've ever been. I don't care that they're sick. They should be guarded like they're some sort of fugitive and then put into these detention centers. Well, you know, you should watch the movie that we actually just aired on youtube.com/TheYoungTurks from Brave New Films. So they did a movie called Immigrant Prisons, and I helped in the premiere. And I heard all the stories of people who've been in these detention centers. Mm-hmm. It is brutal. And some people, and there's no due process. One guy stayed in one of these detention centers for over 9 years. He didn't have a criminal background. He didn't do anything wrong. He actually wound up eventually staying.
Right.
But since you have no rights when you go to not a prison, but to a detention center, you could stay there indefinitely. And they have no idea how long Rosa Maria Hernandez is going to stay there. Yeah. She's without her mom. God knows the state that she's in. And one of the guys that I talked to after the movie Immigrant Prisons was someone who had spent time at a detention center here in California. He's a pastor. Mm-hmm. And again, he came over when he was a kid. The only country he's ever known is this one. And he set up a church here, etc. And he had gone with his kids,
yeah,
like he always does, to check in because he's trying to do the right thing. And his 5-year-old or 7-year-old watch him get arrested. Then he gets sick inside the center, and they never give him treatment. He almost died because they don't care. A lot of them are private, so they're like, well, treating you would cost me money, and this is a private corporation. I don't want to spend any money. I just want to house you for as long as I can.
Right. So I want to go back and just comment on, you know, the portion of the American electorate that looks at stories like this and has absolutely no sympathy whatsoever for this 10-year-old girl, who, by the way, think about how scary it is to have surgery when you're 10 years old, and then add the extra layer of like horrific behavior by these Border Patrol agents who are standing outside the door guarding it as she's going through something pretty scary. And then afterwards, she's separated from her family and thrown into a shelter where she doesn't know what her fate is, right? She's 10 years old, but okay, you don't have any empathy. And I think a lot of people justify it by saying, well, these people come in and then, you know, they take our resources and, you know, taxpayer money helps fund these types of whatever. You know, they'll come up with some sort of justification, right? Which, by the way, on a federal level, aside from getting help when they go to emergency rooms, they don't get any type of government assistance. That is a huge lie. On a state basis, states make decisions whether or not they give some aid, but on a federal level, that is not the case. But here's the thing, what are your priorities? Are your priorities to go after a 10-year-old or maybe oil companies that profit an insane amount and still get subsidized by the government, right? Or I don't know, countries that don't deserve our foreign aid getting billions of dollars a year in foreign aid as they break international laws. Like, that's the kind of stuff that we should be concerned about. That's where the real money goes. Or the fact that the Defense Department continues to get more and more of our funding just so private contractors can make more and more money. Like, that's where the money goes. Wake up. The thing that drives me crazy is that we continuously go after the powerless, right? I get it, we're all frustrated. We want better lives for ourselves and for our families. But you don't get that better life for yourself by going after 10-year-olds.
No. And also I think, I mean, this is where I think that progressives and liberals need to really reclaim a moral high ground here. You know, I know that a lot of us are atheists or whatever, and you know, we think if we talk about morals, like that's a bad thing. But actually, you know, here is a case, and when you have 11 million undocumented immigrants in this country and so many tens of thousands who are being deported and separated from their families, it's a moral issue. Like, if you are a Christian, if you are a Muslim, if you, whatever you are, if you think you have any kind of moral basis, you sure as shit better be supporting this young woman and families who are being separated. I mean, so I think we have to kind of lean into that and be like, yeah, guess what? We have moral authority on an issue like deporting a 10-year-old.
Well, she's not a zygote. So if she's not a zygote, you know, who gives a shit about her life?
Yeah, super last thing. Look, we can't have the whole world come here. I get it. We all get it, right? And we have to have a rational process for figuring this out. But I had my son when he was younger, about 4 or 5 years old, had surgery, and I was dying inside. And it was a minor surgery, but it was an infection, and if it went wrong and things, and then if they ripped him away from me. When he got out of that surgery and put him in a detention center. So for God's sake, be a human. It's not too much to ask for.
Yeah. Well, while Republicans have no interest in protecting a 10-year-old girl's life, they do have a lot of interest in trying to save zygotes. So let's go to that story. Republicans in Congress are planning on proposing and voting in favor of legislation that would ban pregnancies past 6 weeks. Now, they're referring to it as a fetal heartbeat bill. And the argument here is, if there's a heartbeat, which can be detected as early as 6 weeks, well, then the abortion should be outlawed, it should be banned. Now, on November 1st, a Judiciary Committee will hold a hearing to discuss H.R. 490. It's known as the Heartbeat Protection Act of 2017.
I'm so good at that.
Yeah. The proposed bill, which is sponsored by Representative Steve King of Iowa, would make it a federal crime to knowingly perform abortions without determining whether the fetus has a detectable heartbeat, without informing the mother of the results, or after determining that the fetus has a detectable heartbeat. So a lot of women don't even know that they're pregnant at 6 weeks, right? So this would effectively outlaw abortion. It would be very difficult to obtain an abortion if something like this passes. Now, of course, the constitutionality of this will be challenged if it makes its way all the way to the Supreme Court. One would hope that the Supreme Court would look at precedent and rule in the right way. But considering Neil Gorsuch, I don't know. I don't know what will happen. I'm a little concerned about that.
So let's have a conversation for once about something that neither side almost ever talks about. So on the one side, we know that we can't say that it's a person only when it is born, right? Because there is the issue of viability, and that's why in Roe versus Wade, in the third trimester, you cannot have an abortion.
Right.
Okay. Now it's very rough, and I've got my issues with Roe v. Wade and how it was decided and the exact things. But as legislation, I think that viability makes perfect sense as to the drawing line, because it's too far when you just say birth, right? And it's too early when you say right at ejaculation. I mean, let's keep it real. I mean, this is what we're talking about, right?
Right.
And so,
don't stop there.
Mm-hmm.
Keep going. Where does it come from? Go to the testicles.
Yeah. But nobody ever talks about that, right?
Nope, nobody. You don't hear. Why aren't we proposing testicular removal Tuesdays?
Is anyone down here?
Make it happen.
Okay. Okay. I hope not. I hope both sides agree not to do that. But the Republicans really are believing big government so large that they say the minute the ejaculate is inside a woman, it's our property, okay, and you're not allowed to touch it. But wait a minute, the egg and the sperm are inside my body, and they're nowhere near human, right? And they say, nope, I don't care. This is the one and only time that I actually care about people when they're not yet people. Mm-hmm. So why is viability, I think, the right time for the state to care? Because then you have not a deep, even if you think it's a life form, and you know, and a lot of pro-life people genuinely believe it's a life at moment of conception, right? But it is, you cannot argue that it is an independent life form. It is dependent on another life form. Mm-hmm. That is not a black and white issue. That's not an easy issue where you say, okay, it's either a person or it's not a person. Right? No, it is attached to another human being.
Right.
So that is incredibly relevant. Once it is an independent life form, then the state can say, hey, you don't have to take care of that life form anymore. We now have a right to protect that life form, okay? But I think before that it becomes independent, it is dependent on the mother. And yes, they have every right to do with that entity in any way that they choose.
But they don't want to take care of it once it's independent, Jake.
Yeah,
like once it's independent, right. It's like, oh really, you want preschool? Oh, you want to see a doctor for free? Mm-mm, that's not gonna happen. Like early childhood development? No, none of that. Oh, you want maternity leave? Do you want to like nurse your baby? No, none of that. Like nothing matters about this baby's life other than the woman that it is attached to for those 6 weeks or 9 months or whatever it is. And I totally agree with you, yes. The third trimester is not the first trimester, and there is a difference, absolutely. But I think the last time I was on the show, we were talking about El Salvador, random aside. But El Salvador abortion is 100% criminalized. So what happens? And this is a slippery slope when you start to incrementally, like, you know, roll back Roe v. Wade in this level, is that women get pitted against their own zygotes. So their lives are actually take a backseat to the life that's inside of them, whether viable or not. So just in the time that since I was here, last week, a young woman who was suffering leukemia, who got pregnant, who wanted an abortion and sought an abortion and was denied an abortion, died. She died because she was denied her medication to be able to treat her leukemia. And guess what? Her baby didn't live either because the baby was never gonna live.
That's such a great pro-life position to have. I mean,
I know. Okay.
I just think the viability thing is tricky because you know, what if you get into issues like you said, like where the mother's health is at risk?
Right.
You start to get into very murky waters if you know if there was incest or rape, and you know for whatever reason, because there could be a million reasons, the woman isn't able to access an abortion until the third trimester. Then you're starting to get into tricky. You know, you've conceded a huge amount of ethical ground, saying that the viability of the fetus like causes it to you know have you know. Be illegitimate for an abortion. So I don't know. It's very tricky. I'm not going to say that there's just like a, you know, like you said, it's a black and white issue. But I think that just if like we're going to build, you know, a movement around it or something, it's just I can't see how you can start to concede so much ground, you know, to the conservative position.
Yeah.
Because there is a ton of
I have to jump mitigating. In real quick, because I think that unfortunately. even on this panel, we've allowed a right-wing talking point to become credible and legitimate, when in reality it is not credible or legitimate. The vast majority of abortions happen in the first and early second trimester, right? The only time you find doctors that are willing to do late-term abortions is when the woman's life is in danger or that that fetus is not ever going to be viable. There are serious abnormalities and, you know, developmental issues there. And so,
and they fear for their lives for performing those abortions.
That's
and
exactly
there are like
right.
There are maybe two or three left in the country.
Right. And so, you know, the way that those on the right paint abortion is so inaccurate. They make it seem as though it is like a living, breathing, like it's about to, you know,
like alien.
That woman is about to give birth to a healthy baby, and then she decides, oh, last minute, maybe I don't want this pregnancy anymore. It goes to an abortion clinic, and then they do this late-term abortion. It doesn't work that way.
But
and then
I
they
gotta
sell
say,
the baby
though,
parts, right? All the baby parts
they
are
do
sold.
For science.
Yeah, and this is all a way to protect life.
So those are clear lies about the baby parts and stuff, and it's proven so. But look, but once it's viable, I don't think that there's a conversation. Look, even rape, incest doesn't matter. I mean, if the baby's born, then you obviously can't do anything about it, even if it's rape or incest. And at viability, it is to me the equivalent of born. And so, I think, and by the way, that's what basically what Roe versus Wade says as well. So, and that is basically the law of the land right now. Anna's right that that's almost never relevant, because almost all the abortions happen way earlier. It's just, we're talking about it. I only bring it up in the context of, I think that that is the right balance to strike. But if you start saying zygotes are human beings, it's not factually true.
Yeah.
And even if it were somehow true and you could convince people that a zygote is a human being, it is at the very least a dependent life form, not an independent life form.
I wish we could haggle over like healthcare for living people. You know, I wish we were so concerned about week to week cancer patients who can't afford their, you know, their treatments, and that how are they doing in week two and week three, and what's their development. I mean, I wish that Congress, I wish Republicans were as concerned with, you know, people who are living as zygotes. And so my question, I want to ask, you know, Cenk, you, but Anna, you, and you guys are covering this all the time, like, why do Republicans always, when I feel like when they lose everywhere else, women's rights.
Just go to
reproductive rights.
They launch a multi-front war. The Republicans are very good, and it's different from Democrats in that when they're in power, they attack every front, like with full force. And then they force like progressive activists to like, it's like, oh my God, fire here. And then like, you know, quietly 2 days ago, Mike Pence, you know, cast the deciding vote to prevent the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau from allowing class action lawsuits. So that just flies right under the radar.
Yeah.
You know, because there's like a multi-front war going on, and that's something that they're just always, always very good at. It's something that's very different from what Democrats do when they're in power, where they're like, maybe we'll try this thing.
And I think to bait people, to bait us into having these conversations, to bait us into Francesca is pro-abortion. She loves abortion, you know what I mean? Or to bait us into having these non-shades of gray argument or conversations that take seriously, issues of abortion. And I feel like it's just red meat for like, the red states.
Well, yeah, it is red meat. And you look, intentions matter. And so Representative Steve King is a loser, right? And he's not the only loser in Congress. Congress as a whole is full of losers because they can't get anything done. So how do they get reelected? They pander to their right-wing base with this nonsense. You think, I mean, I'm curious to see how many women he's slept with who have had abortions, right? Because I'm not gonna buy for a second that someone like Steve King hasn't knocked up a mistress or two, okay?
It's
That's speculation, but we've had a number of right-wing members of the GOP.
All the time.
Exactly, they get their mistresses pregnant and then all of a sudden abortion's fine and dandy. It's for political brownie points, nothing more. Or to control women, they hate the fact that women can decide their own fate.
And last thing, guys, look, 7 out of 10 Americans, literally 69% is the actual number, are pro-choice. So, and believe Roe versus Wade should be protected. But the reason the Steve Kings of the world do this is because it does work with their base, and they all get riled up, and all the 3 out of 10 all go vote on this one issue, even though it is unconstitutional and they know realistically they cannot pass it. But people who are pro-choice, the 7 out of 10, No, they don't vote based on this issue. And yes, women's rights are constantly attacked, but a lot of times the Democrats are not able to energize women and say, for God's sake, let's defend ourselves. They are, to Nando's point, they're constantly on the attack. And Democrats cannot find a way to muster up the defense, let alone to counterattack against these guys. And that's why they keep putting up bills like this, because it keeps getting them votes.
Dude,
you should vote the other way. You're 7 out of 10, you're not 3 out of 10. You should win in a democracy.
Right. Not to mention, if all these Republicans were women themselves, like, I might think about it. You know, I might be like, you know, I've been wrong. I've been wrong on choice.
No.
I wouldn't, but like, show me an all female, you know, legislature that is going to vote for, you know, a 6-week abortion ban.
Or at least 50%.
Or at least 50%.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway. All right, we got to take a quick break, guys. When we come back, my favorite story of the day, the JFK files.
Love this story.
Oh, it's amazing.
So you read them all, right?
So I'm from Miami. I love this story.
Yeah. And it's such an important revelation to tell you about how our government, at the very least, used to work. Okay, and it is pretty devastating. All right, we'll come right back. All right, back on the Young Turks. Our members of the day are Matthew Bell and Desire or Desiree Dunn. You all get a post game today from the staff, and of course get all the network shows all but ad free if you're a member. tytnetwork.com/join. We're gonna go to a couple of tweets here. Joseph says, "I must say, Cenk has gotten better at remembering to drop it for the second hour on Fridays."
He has.
It's very important. I'm glad we got that straightened out. Daniel's
looking out.
Yeah. Daniel says, so ICE agents are basically the world's creepiest stalkers now.
Yeah.
One way to look at it. Yeah. And Billy Runaway says, Bull, ICE agents take these jobs to be dicks to immigrants. That is a Jimmy Dore-esque opinion on it.
I agree with that opinion.
Oh, you do?
Yeah, because I didn't get a chance to show how much I disagreed with your statement regarding how, like, oh, it's don't blame them. It's like, you know, they're being, you know, forced to do. No, we all choose what we do with ourselves, right?
Tough economy out there, though.
Yeah,
so don't care. If you have decided that your job and your career is to agree with someone who's demanding that you go after 10-year-olds with cerebral palsy, you're a bad guy. Sorry.
I think it's a little bit more complicated, but I hear you. Okay, let's go forward. What's next, Anna?
All right. The parliament in Catalonia voted, and they have voted in favor of independence, leading the central government of Spain to quickly dissolve it or attempt to dissolve it. Now, the final ballot in Catalonia was 70-10 in favor of the declaration of independence in the Catalan parliament, where 55 deputies declined to vote, showing deep divisions. Now, if you can remember earlier, a couple of weeks ago, there was a vote in Barcelona that basically indicated the people in Catalonia wanted that independence. However, voter turnout was around 40%, partly because they were met with violence by police officials that were sent by the central government of Spain. Now, Spain's prime minister does not agree with this effort to secede, and as a result, he plans to dismantle the Catalan government, suspend its ministers, dissolve its parliament, and also take over regional police. Now, it's unclear how that's going to happen or what they're planning on doing to lead to all these, you know, bullet points that I just mentioned. But things are getting bad. Things are getting really bad. And we actually have someone here from Barcelona who knows a thing or two about the situation.
Yeah, if we only had an expert on Catalonia.
Where can we find one?
All right, Nando, go.
Well, this is a very complicated and fluid situation, right? The Catalan government announced independence, and then the Madrid government basically immediately said, okay, no, your government is now illegitimate. Mm-hmm. The question, though, now is how does the Madrid government exert its state power over Catalonia, which is one of the largest and richest regions in Spain, right? You know, literally, how are they going to, you know, force them to dismantle? Because if the government in Catalonia doesn't recognize the government of Madrid and they declare independence, you know, they're basically you know, saying, putting all their chips on the table and saying, like, either you guys basically invade or, you know, we're just going to continue soldiering on. The complicating factor in this, which is different from you know, other independence movements that have been in the past in Europe, such as Montenegro and Czech Republic versus Czechoslovakia, is that the people of Catalonia are about 50-50. I mean, it is like probably below 50% on favoring independence, but around 50-50. So basically half the population is completely freaked out. Right, they're staring at the edge of the abyss. They're saying they feel like they're being pushed off a cliff.
Yeah.
Right. So what's going to happen in theory? There's going to be elections, regional elections in December. But it's highly likely that the independence parties are not even going to participate. They're going to declare it illegitimate, and they're going to try to force the hand of independence. Because if you think about it, it doesn't make sense to run twice on the issue of independence, right? They're going to say like, okay, this time we're really going to do it. You know, like they can't, they have to go all in now or never.
I have a quick question. So what I gather is that part of the reason why they want to separate so badly is because it is a wealthier part of Spain, wealthier region where they pay a disproportionate amount in taxes, which it seems like they don't have a problem with that if they felt like they were getting something in return. But they feel as though the government is denying them certain services that other parts of Spain receives. Am I getting that correct?
Well, sure. I mean, but that's just, I mean, you know, California, which is wealthier than other, like Missouri, contributes more than Missouri does in taxes and gets, you know what I mean? Like that's just federalism, right? The wealthier regions subsidize the poorer regions, right?
Right.
Which is why, I mean, to me, the big, I mean, as a person on the left and a person from Spain and Catalonia, like I've always had problems with Catalan nationalism because it's a force, it's a right-wing reactionary force, right? This idea that they want to separate from Spain and sort of basically, you know, take my pie and I'm going to eat it all, you know, rather than, you know, help out other poor Spaniards, like I find to be like wrong ethically, morally, and everything, right? That's one of the strange things about the Catalonia independence movement is that, you know, contrary to Scotland or Montenegro or whatever, these are poorer regions sort of liberating themselves from a richer quote unquote oppressor. This is the richest region saying like, no, you guys are holding us back. We're going to get out of here.
It escalated so quickly, which is crazy, right? Like, what do you think the Spanish government should have done or the central government? Because it's like, why repress people in a vote that 40% turned out to that was largely symbolic? It's just like, let them vote.
Well, that's exactly right. When 5 years ago, when Mariano Rajoy's right-wing government took power in Madrid, independence was, you know, below 20% in the polls, right? 5 years later, it's around 50%, and the country's falling apart, right? In those 5 years, Rajoy and his right-wing government have basically taken the approach of like, shut up, we don't even want to talk to you. You have zero legitimacy, just shut up, you know? And of course, all that has done is it's been a factory for independence people. Like, it's just like, okay, yep, keep on going, you know, just give us more. And it's just fueled the tension so much. Instead, he should have extended a hand to Catalonia, oddly, like the British Tories did to Scotland, right? It was the British right-wing government, the Tories, that offered Scotland a vote and then did a positive campaign. You know, like, you know, Scotland, we love you, you know, remain, blah, blah, blah. And you know what? They ended up voting to remain, which is probably would have happened in Catalonia if they had given them the vote.
It's almost as if pushing people into a corner and always relying on conflict is not a great strategy.
Okay. That's why they pay you the big bucks.
Yeah, and that's my main contribution to the story because he's got it. The only thing that anybody else wanted from this story was for Nando to say Catalonia again.
Yeah, just
Catalonia.
One more time. Catalonia.
Yeah. Catalonia.
That's pretty good. All right, we solved it. Next.
All right. Some of the documents that have been sealed in regard to JFK's assassination have been released. Not all of the documents that Trump said he was going to release, but some of them. Nonetheless, we have some rather fascinating details about what the CIA was planning on doing to Cuban refugees in the South Florida area just to rally support in invading Cuba and going after Fidel Castro. So let me give you these details. So after Castro's revolution after Castro's revolution succeeded and thousands of Cubans fled to South Florida, the agency actually considered murdering a boatload of refugees, assassinating exile leaders and planting bombs in Miami. Also, Castro could be blamed for the chaos. Now, that was based on reporting done by the Miami New Times. They did a good job in, you know, going through some of these documents. And, you know, there was speculation that the CIA was planning something like this, especially considering the fact that there were mobs making big bucks in Cuba, and they really, really did not like the revolution. Mm-hmm. So the details of the sinister plot are included in a summary about Operation Mongoose, a 1960 covert op hatched by the CIA under President Dwight Eisenhower with the aim of toppling communist Cuba. Drones.
Yeah, so for all those in the Cuban community voting for the right wing for all these years, they had a secret plot to kill you for their own political purposes. But anyway, keep voting for them, see how that turns out. So look, I plug this book from time to time because it's so good. Devil's Chessboard by David Talbot. Yes. If you read that book, you're not going to be at all surprised by this story. The CIA, unfortunately, in this country for a long, long time did not represent us, the citizens. They represented multinational corporations and the powerful and the connected. And so in the case of Cuba, there was a lot of money being made in Cuba. And after the revolution, they wanted that money back. Mm-hmm. Now, does it help America to do a fake terrorism plot inside the US? Well, it would be real. I mean, the US government, the CIA, would have been the terrorist in that case. Of course, it doesn't help us. That's atrocious, unbelievable, outrageous. It doesn't help the citizens. It doesn't help the Cuban refugees who would have been blown up in that plot. It only helps the corporations who wanted their money back. And look, this is well-known history about what the CIA did for the benefit of many corporations. Predominantly the oil companies. We deposed a government in Iran, mm-hmm. which has had blowback for the last 70 years because of that. Mm-hmm. Iran hates us now, and we've been in an internal conflict because we deposed their democratically elected leader back in 1953. And the US government has also admitted to that now. Why? Because we wanted a cheaper oil. Not for us. We weren't going to get, the citizens weren't going to get the cheaper oil. No, our oil companies were going to get cheaper oil and make a bigger profit off of it. In Central America, it was literally the banana companies. That's why some of those countries are called banana republics, because we would depose their democratically elected leaders because our banana companies said, how dare you nationalize your bananas? We own all your natural resources. So the CIA has been doing murder on the benefit of corporations for a long, long time. So now this is, to be fair, this is the 1960s and not today. And by the way, one last thing, back in the 1960s, the Gulf of Tonkin. Yeah. So there's been lie after lie, and back in the day, the Gulf of Tonkin, false flag. This was going to be literally a false flag operation. So there were dozens of conspiracies planned, some executed, some not executed. This one was not executed, but it was planned, authorized, and then luckily it never came to fruition. But others did. All right, I don't want to get into JFK, but
and that caused a rift, right? That's what the Devil's Chessboard talks about, right? Is sort of that. I mean, you don't want to necessarily go there, but like the little conspiracy that JFK's rift with Alan Dulles, right, about how to approach Cuba, especially after the Bay of Pigs went so awry.
Yeah. By the way, I just want to be absolutely clear: the real conspiracy is that one person shot JFK with a magic bullet and was immediately killed by a guy who proclaimed that he hated JFK, but all of a sudden grew patriotic in that one day, right? That's the conspiracy theory. The reality is, yes, powerful people were furious at JFK for not declaring that war that they had already planned with Cuba to get their money back and to get their companies back, etc. And that's what got JFK killed.
What's amazing to me is just how little, you know, these CIA agents cared about human lives, right? Like, but we want to go into Cuba, like we want to invade Cuba, we want to get rid of Castro. So of course we would kill these innocent Cuban exiles. Like, why wouldn't we? You know, it's just like this complete lack of any concern about human life. Like, it's amazing to me. And also, I don't know, man. This story shook me. Well, like it really did.
It's interesting also that it happened, that it was around Cuba, because the United States basically ran Cuba as a de facto colony from 1898 to 1957 after. Recolonizing Cuba after a war with Spain, that was started after there was an explosion on a US naval ship called the USS Maine. That it's unclear who exploded that ship. You know, they use it as a pretext to declare war with Spain, but it's unclear who blew up that ship. So it would have been like a nice little full circle in Cuba if there were two false flags organized by the American government to justify an invasion of Cuba. But this story, I mean, it's just the I mean, Americans are not too familiar with. I mean, it was mentioned in the article, the broader Operation Mongoose, you know, which was a campaign of violence led by the CIA at Cuba, where they shot down commercial airliners. They did all kinds of all kinds of what we would call, if it happened to us, terrorist attacks.
Yes.
You know,
and there's no need to to go soft on it. Yeah, they planned terrorist attacks.
Yeah,
that's what the CIA did. This, now it's fact. Now we know this is government files. This is, we didn't make this up.
No,
the US government just released these files saying we had planned several terrorist attacks, including this one. Luckily, this one was not executed.
And I just want to say that, like, continuing a little bit today in terms of the way we approach, you know, our counterterrorism strategy, and just it's not about actual plots that people are carrying out, but there's a lot of entrapment that's going on with like susceptible young, you know, Muslims online, you know, and just to say that like the legacy of planting these sort of like, you know, these plots to then arrest people and like call them ISIS or call them terrorists or whatever for like a broader gain. I mean, that continues today.
Unfortunately, it's a very old playbook.
Yes.
All right, guys, we're out of time. Thank you for watching. Appreciate it. Bye bye.